You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we're talking about the atomic bomb.
So grab your uranium.
And let's get civical.
Everyone.
Hi, everybody. We're back.
You couldn't get rid of us.
You couldn't do it. I know it was a surprise. Mm-hmm. Surprise. Mm-hmm. We took a holiday. Mm-hmm. We tried really hard.
We did.
To record.
Yeah.
But sometimes the holiday is forced upon you.
It is. You have no choice. You must go to grandma's house.
We surrendered. The wolf ate us. So we took last week off, but we're back.
And not only are we back, but one of us is a year older today.
Ooh, can you guess who? Can you guess by the sound of my voice?
She's become 87 in the course of...
I'm 87 years old.
Over the break.
As of yesterday. Yes. So... when this comes out, I will have been a year older for 2 days. Mm-hmm. So I will have, I think, gotten a hang of this new age by that point.
Are you 28 now?
I'm 28 as of now.
Oh my God.
Isn't that insane? I'm in my late 20s, you could argue.
One could say you are in your late
20s. Somebody could argue.
How was 27? Did you enjoy 27?
Oh, I mean, it was my COVID year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
An entire year devoted to COVID.
Yeah, it's definitely your COVID year. I mean, my birthday is coming up as well, and it was also, yep, you know, a COVID year.
A COVID year.
But also, like, a really great year. I had a fucking great year. So I hope...
For sure.
I hope you had a great 27.
You know what? It was not as bad as 26 was, and I think that's all we can hope for.
That's all you can hope for. That's it.
I think I'm on an upswing.
Yes.
You know, and I'm excited to see what 28 has to offer.
Yeah, girl.
And yeah, it's my birthday. My parents are in town. They're staying with me. Ooh, ooh, ooh. So I'm recording in my bedroom. So to our sweet, sweet listeners, you're going to hear the sound of the train go by And you just have to love it. You have to love it because I live right above a train and I have nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. So just love me like I love you and give this to me as my birthday
present. There you go. Forgiveness for your birthday present.
Forgiveness is what I'm asking for my birthday. Not unlike Jesus. Okay?
No. Not Jesus. I am recording in an Airbnb under a blanket once again.
She's under a blanket again,
you guys. A different Airbnb, a different blanket.
But I think the last one was gray, too.
The last one was...
Your last blanket?
The last one was, like, a blue, like, picnic blanket. This one is a gray, like, quilty thing.
Which we love. Yes,
and last time it was in Arkansas. Now we are currently in North Carolina, so we're, you know, we've made some moves. You're just
hitting the whole South.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to cover the South under a blanket.
When are you finally... Are you back by our next episode?
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
A changed woman.
I know.
What, like 30 days on the road?
Something like that, yeah.
It's crazy.
I know, insane. So fun. But yes, insane.
But insane.
But insane.
Speaking of insane, I think that's a great segue to today's topic.
Yeah.
Which... I'm super interested in because I think we all know about it, but we've never really gotten into the nitty gritty of it, mm-hmm. probably for very good reasons, but we can't hide anymore. We're going to get into it in this episode, and we're talking about the Manhattan Project and the atomic bomb. I mean, first thoughts on both of these things, Arden?
I mean, first thoughts, I guess, like... I mean, the story of how it came about is, like, kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very interesting. And I love this whole time period. So, like, that, like, researching it was super fun. But just, like, the, like, we didn't really know what we were doing. I mean, I think in theory people understood, yeah. like, we're going to drop a bomb. People understood bombs, but people, I don't think, really... I don't know. Like, I'm sure they thought it through. You would like to think that they thought it through. But the fact that we just dropped these two huge bombs and decimated parts of a country,
yeah.
like, is absolutely insane.
Yeah. It really is profound. And especially it's, like, because we can, we're taught in our, when we learn about World War II, that, you know, this happened at the tail end, obviously, of World War II. And it was in context, I think, how I was taught that the bombs were in context of, like, fighting World War II and fighting Hitler and, like, you know, doing this crazy thing to take down this crazy being.
Right.
When, in fact, you know, I think by the time they were dropped, we had already taken back Europe, and so the war was just happening in the Pacific, or am I wrong?
You're correct in that it was developed because they thought Germany was going to develop them first, and so, like, the plan was to, I mean, maybe not use them against Germany, but, like, in response to Germany developing the technology, and then use them against Japan. Like, it was not the intended purpose.
Not the intended purpose. And look, I'm not necessarily, like, anti-development for the sake of, like, flexing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's, I mean, now that's the only reason that we develop them is to essentially show force.
Right.
But I'm not pro-dropping them. So I'm going to start off this episode by saying I am not pro at all nuclear weapons. Using them.
Using them, yeah.
So if you feel a certain way about that, then I'm just going to let you know right now that that's where I'm going to come back to.
Right. I mean, there's just no way around the death and destruction. I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of innocent life.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to hit civilians. Like thousands of them. Thousands of them.
Yeah, if you don't, like, you have a bad bomb, you know, like, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. But before we jump in, Arden, do you want to go over today's sources?
Yes. Today, our Saoirse Ronan sources are coming from the American Museum of Natural History.
Oh, love.
I know. I was really excited about
love.
History.com.
Of course.
And the Department of Energy.
Sure, let's talk to them. Let's talk to our department. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start off with the inventors and the Manhattan Project. Let's start off with this little sector of this story. So most of these notes are coming from the American Museum of Natural History right here in the Big Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1938, three chemists working in a laboratory in Berlin made a discovery that would alter the course of history. They split the uranium atom.
Yeah, it's the split that started it all.
Yeah, the split
like
around
Ashton
the world,
and Demi.
So. Exactly. Wow. Wow. Throw it there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, obviously splitting a atom is big, big, bada bang, bada boom. Uranium, bada bang, bada boom.
Yeah.
I love it. The energy released when this splitting or fission occurs is tremendous, enough to power a bomb. But before such a weapon could be built, numerous technical problems had to be overcome. I mean, yeah, you can't just like split this thing willy-nilly or you'll blow yourself up, you know?
Right, you gotta split it the right way. Contain
you gotta
the
split.
Contain
it the right way.
Contain the split. Keep it out of the tabloids.
Continuing on. When Einstein learned that the German might succeed in solving these problems, he wrote to President Franklin Roosevelt with his concerns. Einstein's 1939 letter helped initiate the U.S. efforts to build an atomic bomb, but work proceeded slowly at first. I'm interested that Einstein was involved. Like, that's a surprise little out of left field guy.
I didn't realize that. And there's like his whole journey through this project is like very interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew that he was, maybe I knew that he was a part of it, but I didn't realize that he was like the instigator.
Writing the president, for God's sakes.
Well, but it makes sense because it wasn't like, you know, German, like, it wasn't the German government who was developing this. It was these like physicists, like his counterparts in Germany,
and it's
who
a
were
small
developing
circle
it.
Of physicists.
It's
in
it
the world.
Is as small as the theater industry in New York. Like,
oh my God, a gossipy, gossipy industry.
Yes.
Fellow physicist Leo Szilard,
we'll say that,
urged Einstein to send the letter and helped him draft it. So this was the letter to FDR, being like, my dude. They're figuring it out, so you've got to do something.
They're building big weapons over
They're building,
here.
You have no idea, my dude.
I feel like we may need big weapons ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Two other findings in 1940 and 1941 demonstrated conclusively that the bomb was feasible and made building a bomb a top priority for the United States. The determination of the, quote, critical mass of uranium needed and the confirmation that plutonium could undergo fission and be used as a bomb. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now we're bringing plutonium into this.
Mm-hmm.
At first, Roosevelt set up the advisory committee on uranium because obviously the first thing you do with anything is you set up an advisory committee.
Make a committee about it.
So he set up a committee, which ended up being a team of scientists and military officials tasked with researching uranium's potential role as a weapon. Based on the committee's findings, the U.S. government started funding research by Enrico Fermi and Leo Szilard at Columbia University. Mm-hmm. Yep. Hello, Columbia, your alma mater.
My alma mater. Mm-hmm.
Which was focused on radioactive isotope separation, also known as uranium enrichment, and nuclear chain reactions. Man, I don't like talking about all these elements. Some of them are hard to say. It's a landmine for me.
It is literally a bomb yard for Lizzie.
It's a bomb yard for me. In December of 1941, the government launched the Manhattan Project, the scientific and military undertaking to develop the bomb. And you know what? You know, at least we got the name.
I know. The only thing that had to do in Manhattan was that it was Columbia. I mean, there's it wasn't. Right. That's it.
Oh, yeah. That same year, following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt declared that the U.S. would enter World War II and align with Great Britain, France, and Russia to fight against the Germans in Europe and the Japanese in the Pacific Theater. The Army Corps of Engineers joined the OSRD in 1942 with President Roosevelt's approval, and the project officially morphed into a military initiative with scientists serving in a supporting role. Mm-hmm. So the military is now like, let me take a look at your bombs. Mm-hmm. And the scientists are like, okay. Okay, yes. I'm now best supporting actor. All right.
The military did to the atomic bomb developers what, like, the head scientist guy did to Jodie Foster in the movie Contact when she first heard the, like, the sound from space that came and gave, like, when she first heard it. And then the mean scientist guy who worked for the government came in and took it. And there's a whole scene where he takes credit at the press conference. And that's exactly what the military did to these scientists for the atomic bomb.
Way to bring Contact seamlessly into this episode.
Anytime I can, I will.
And I love that for you.
Thank you.
And I love that for us as this you're podcast. So welcome. Continuing on December 28, 1942, President Roosevelt authorized the formation of the Manhattan Project to combine these various research efforts with the goal of weaponizing nuclear energy. Facilities were set up in remote locations in New Mexico, Tennessee, and Washington, as well as sites in Canada for this research and related atomic tests to be performed. So, like, just think mushroom clouds. Mm-hmm. They basically, like, we need a big stretch of land to just blow up and blow up and blow up.
Yeah. Because we don't want to kill any of our people, but we need to test these big bombs. So, like,
we do have to do a dress rehearsal.
Yes.
Los Alamos Laboratory, the creation of which was known as Project Y, Y is in yellow, was formally established on January 1st, 1943. The complex is where the first Manhattan Project bombs were built and tested. On July 16th, 1945, in a remote desert location near Alamogordo, New Mexico, sorry for that pronunciation.
I think it was perfect.
It was close. I just had to sound it out. The first atomic bomb was successfully detonated, also known as the Trinity Test, creating an enormous mushroom cloud some 40,000 feet high and ushering in the atomic age. So it took several years to, like, get us to, it took what, 4 years, 4 or 5 years to get us to a mushroom cloud?
Yeah.
I mean, it's both not a long time and it's a long time.
And it's a long time.
Interesting. Scientists working under Oppenheimer had developed two distinctive types of bombs, a uranium-based design called the Little Boy, and a plutonium-based weapon called the Fat Man. I mean, you couldn't have come up with, like, two, like similar things, you know, like Beavis and Butthead, you know what I mean? Like a dynamic duo name?
Seriously, how hard was it? The Destroyer
and... They're not even trying.
The Monster. I don't know, like... Little Boy and Fat Man.
Yeah. With both designs at the works in Los Alamos, they became an important part of the U.S. strategy aimed at bringing an end to World War II. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, they are a deterrent. And when you detonate them, they are even more a deterrent.
They are big and loud and scary.
Yep, yep, yep.
We're going to take a quick break for a little word from our sponsors.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
That's the foundation, and now we're going to get to the two houses that I'm sure everybody knows and recognizes.
Yes. The bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan.
Yeah. Lay it on me.
Okay, here we go. These are coming from history.com and the American Museum of Natural History. So on July 26, 1945, at the Potsdam Conference in the Allied occupied city of Potsdam, Germany, the U.S. delivered an ultimatum to Japan: surrender under the terms outlined in the Potsdam Declaration, which included, among other things, a call for the Japanese to form a new democratic and peaceful government or face, quote, prompt and utter destruction, close quote.
I mean,
they were like,
they weren't joking.
They weren't joking. They were like, get rid of your dictator, be a democracy, or we'll just end you.
Yeah. I mean, I think prompt and utter destruction is like a real, you know.
Yeah.
They're being a little dramatic, but they did deliver.
They did deliver. I mean, they drew a line in the sand and that was it.
Yep.
As the Potsdam Declaration provided no role for the emperor in Japan's future, the ruler of the island nation was unwilling to accept its terms. Of course, he's not going to be like, yeah, okay, I will step down. Yeah. I will. No, he's like, fuck you. Who are you to tell me what to do?
Right.
Meanwhile, the military leaders of the Manhattan Project had identified Hiroshima, Japan, as an ideal target for an atomic bomb, given its size and the fact that there were no known American prisoners of war in the area.
This is where, like, I'm just going to start struggling with U.S.
I know.
Because, yeah, that's great size. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we don't want to kill prisoners of war. But just the fact that, like, there's no hesitation that it is, so there's civilians there, is insane.
Yeah. I mean, there's no, I mean, I'm sure you would hope that they calculated that, like, this.
They're like, oh, maybe it's not as many civilians as somewhere else. But still, right. Like, I mean, you know, the attack on Pearl Harbor was a military base.
Yeah.
You know, they attacked a military base. Yeah. They didn't attack just a city of people.
No.
Not to say that, like, Hiroshima and Nagasaki didn't have military, you know, things there, but dang, y'all.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So continuing on, with no surrender agreement in place, on August 6th, 1945, the Enola Gay bomber plane dropped the as yet untested Little Boy bomb some 1,900 feet above Hiroshima, causing unprecedented destruction and death over an area of 5 square miles. The Little Boy exploded with about 13 kilotons of force, leaving 5 square miles of the city decimated and killing 80,000 people instantly. tens of thousands more would later die from radiation exposure. So yeah,
it's like, this is crazy. Like,
crazy. 80,000 just gone in an instant, like just from impact. And then more people died like later because of high cancer and exposure.
And also remember, these are civilians.
And they're civilians. I mean, yes, probably not all of them, but yeah, a lot of them are going to be civilians. Like,
that's of the 80,000. I mean, yeah, it's wild. This is wild.
Yeah. 3 days later, with still no surrender declared, this is the one that I'm like, okay, we saw what it did, and we still thought we would do this again.
Mm-hmm.
3 days later, with no surrender declared, on August 9th, the Fat Man bomb was dropped over Nagasaki, site of a torpedo building factory destroying more than 3 square miles of the city. So this one, at least, they were like, I mean,
this one they were targeting a something.
Yeah, like this, I mean, so like maybe they were targeting something in Hiroshima, but like Nagasaki was, because it was, there were a defense building it's a torpedo that they were going right after something military based, you know, but like still
it's brutal.
Brutal. I mean, brutal.
To think that like if you're going after the torpedo plant, I'm like, go for it. Go after the torpedo plant, like blow up military things.
Yeah.
I totally understand. But we've just dropped the little one and killed 80,000 people instantly. I think we're going to get more than just the torpedo plant with the Fat Man.
That's what I mean. I wonder, like, it would be really interesting to know, like, what the, like, how much they knew of the destruction. Like, obviously it would be a huge mushroom cloud and it would be bad, but I wonder if they, because you can't count, like, okay, 80,000 dead, you know, Mr. President, like, I mean, I wonder how much they knew.
Think it's also I mean, I think as far as like if how many people they killed, I mean, it's like, just, these are not unintelligent people. I mean, they built the bomb. It's like when they were doing the tests, they saw how what happened in a certain square miles worth of like what was, you know, the area that it detonated in. So it's like, look at a map, guesstimate. They knew when they dropped both bombs that there would be significant loss of human life.
Yeah.
Because they're not stupid. They know how big these things are. They tested it and they thought, let's do it.
Let's do it again. I don't understand. Let's do it
not once but twice.
I don't understand dropping the atomic bomb on the, like, I mean, we do this all the time. We go after military plants and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, just drop a regular bomb. Why does
just
it have
a regular
to be
one?
Just a regular bomb. Why does it
right
have to
which
be
is
nuclear?
But that's the thing. It's like, it wasn't, yes, they targeted the torpedo plant, but that wasn't their main target. They could have taken out the torpedo plant.
Yeah.
They wanted to decimate a city and a country and civilians.
So crazy.
Crazy.
Not our best moment.
No.
So Nagasaki had not been the primary target for the second bomb. American bombers initially had targeted the city of Kokura, where Japan had one of its largest munitions plants, but smoke from the firebombing raids occurred over the sky of Kokura. American planes then turned toward their secondary target, Nagasaki. So they couldn't see the original city. They couldn't see the target. So they were like, all right, next. And they moved on. The Fat Man killed an estimated 40,000 people on impact. The two bombs combined killed more than 100,000 people and leveled the two Japanese cities to the ground. By the end of 1945, an estimated 200,000 people had died in the two cities.
I mean, it's just crazy.
The Japanese informed Washington, which following Roosevelt's death was under new leadership under President Harry Truman, of their intention to surrender on August 10th and formally surrendered on August 14th, 1945. So they surrendered the day after Nagasaki.
I mean, yeah, because at this point, Japan's not big.
Well, and they're not stupid. They're like, these Americans are insane. And they're going to keep coming for us if we don't surrender.
Right. They're literally like, I think it's this thing of like, I showed for better or for worse, I think for worse, that we have no regard for their life.
Yeah.
Like, and the royal they.
Yeah. And the royal they. <of them. laughs> Yes. So Albert Einstein, upon hearing the news of the Hiroshima bombing, is quoted to have said, "Woe is me."
Ironically or unironically?
I think unironically. There's like, so like at just the end,
full of regret.
Yeah. So at the end, we're going to do, I'll talk about some interesting facts. And one of them specifically has to do with Einstein and like his feelings about the bombs and all of that.
All right. Well, before we get to that, let's talk about the lasting implications, because I think it's important to talk about this stuff. So following the end of the war, the United States formed the Atomic Energy Commission to oversee research efforts designed to apply the technologies developed under the Manhattan Projects to other fields. Ultimately, in 1964, then-President Lyndon B. Johnson put an end to the U.S. government's effective monopoly over nuclear energy by allowing for private ownership over nuclear materials, which, like, what an interesting move.
Right. Well, I think for energy, right, like, it's still the same kind of technology. And so, yeah, so they're, but also stupid, yes.
Yeah, I'm just like, especially Lyndon B. Johnson, I'm like,
I know.
Of all the presidents to be like, yeah, you can have some of this.
Yeah, yeah.
He wouldn't strike me as that one.
No.
The nuclear fission technology perfected by the Manhattan Project engineers has since become the basis for the development of nuclear reactors, for power generators, as well as other innovations, including medical imaging systems, for example, MRI machines, and radiation therapies for various forms of cancer. So again, my beef is never with the development of this energy.
Mm-hmm.
It is with the dropping of the bombs.
Yes. Yeah.
The United States was the only country with nuclear weaponry in the years immediately following World War II. The Soviets initially lacked the knowledge and raw materials to build nuclear warheads. Within just a few years, however, the USSR had obtained, through a network of spies engaging in international espionage, blueprints of a fission-style bomb and discovered regional sources of uranium in Eastern Europe. On August 29th, 1949, the Soviets tested their first nuclear bomb, which mm-hmm. obviously sent us into a tizzy.
Oh, yes.
Although, again, we had no problem dropping it on other people.
Nobody wants to be destroyed, including the United States. Yeah,
I'm like, it's literally like, my dude, you brought this into the world.
Right, you did this. This is your
problem. You set the precedent that, like, yeah, mm-hmm. you showed everybody what this could do, and now you're mad that other people are doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The United States responded by launching a program in 1950 to develop more advanced thermonuclear weapons. The Cold War arms race had begun, and nuclear testing and research became high-profile goals for several countries, especially the United States and the Soviet Union. Duck and cover, honey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So these are some, I wouldn't call them like fun facts. They're just...
No, there's nothing fun.
There's nothing fun about this. These are interesting facts. Interesting facts, interesting facts, interesting facts.
Perfect.
Thank you. It's too, it doesn't quite fit the meter, but you get the idea.
Oh, absolutely.
So in July of 1940, the U.S. Army Intelligence Office denied Einstein the security clearance needed to work on the Manhattan Project.
How are you going to deny Einstein?
Because he was a pinko commie liberal. The hundreds of scientists on the project were forbidden from consulting with Einstein because the left-leaning political activist was deemed a potential security risk. They thought he was like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
it's so Einstein.
Like, yeah. So like, so yes, like Einstein brought it to the attention of the president, but he wasn't advocating that, like,
right,
we should destroy people. He literally was just Germany,
yeah.
The German physicists are working on this. Just a heads up, it would be disastrous should that bomb or whatever they decide to do with the technology that they're realizing they can develop should come towards the United States. Like, it would, that's really all he was doing. But what ended up happening was, like, the United States was like, oh shit, oh, we can do this too, and we can kill people with it. Okay.
Yeah. Let's commit war crimes. Let's
Game on. Game on. Einstein was frequently asked to explain his role in the Manhattan Project in the building of the bombs. And when a Japanese editor asked him, quote, why did you cooperate in the production of atomic bombs, knowing full well their destructive power? Einstein answered that his only act had been to write President Roosevelt, suggesting that the United States research atomic weapons before the Germans harnessed this deadly technology. He came to regret even taking this step, and in an interview with Newsweek magazine, he said that, quote, had I known that the Germans would not succeed in developing an atomic bomb, I would have done nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Einstein is not the culprit here. And anybody who tries to, like, put blood on Einstein's hand, it's like, yeah. No.
No.
I get what he was doing. And especially during a time where the Germans were at the height of their power,
yeah,
you know, he freaked and just let somebody know. And then we did our thing and just.
Well, and it's not like the Germans developing a new way to kill people was like unheard of because, hello, the Holocaust. Right. So like it wasn't, you know, like he wasn't without reason to be afraid of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, hindsight's always 20/20. So that's also, yeah, so like he did, so that's about Einstein. He did alert the president and he later came to regret it because, you know, it set in motion all of these events that then led to massive death and destruction. However, the National, on a slightly lighter note, the National Park Service operates three sites to preserve Manhattan Project history. For over a decade, the U.S. Department of Energy and the National Park Service, in cooperation with other federal agencies, state and local governments, and other stakeholders, pursued the possibility of including the Department of Energy's most significant Manhattan Project properties within a Manhattan Project National Park.
I just feel like we should not be putting this into a national park.
I mean, I feel like it's not a national park in the sense that, like, let's go have a picnic here. I feel like
it's a national park
in the sense of, like, if you, like the concentration camps are still in Germany. Like,
sure. I just have my problem with the atomic bombs is, like I was saying at the top of this, which is, like, they are put into this context of, like, we did this, we were amazing and ended the war by doing this. And I feel like we're not holding ourselves accountable in the way that, like, Germany is holding themselves accountable for what's going on with the Holocaust. Because you're right, like, the concentration camps and, like, even just, like, within Berlin, like, a lot of somber places.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, I'm like, are we really taking into context what we did?
But I do think that the U.S. has, I mean, they've been, I mean, maybe not Trump, but, like, in general, American presidents have been, in recent history, the leaders on, like, nuclear non-proliferations and trying to, like, tamp down on all of the.
Absolutely.
I think there has been a change, and I don't think that the national, like, making them national parks is, like, celebrating them. I think it's actually doing the same thing of preserving, like, this was a moment in history that shouldn't be forgotten and we should learn the lessons from it. I mean, like, that's my, I mean, yeah. Maybe that's not what they're thinking, but that was my kind of interpretation of it is, like, we did this huge, because this wasn't like this happened right away. This happened.
No.
So,
obviously.
You know, so.
We're not this organized to, like.
No.
Get them all designated as parks. No, it takes at least 25 years in the United States to do that.
Absolutely. So after numerous studies and several draft bills, Congress passed the National Defense Authorization Act of 2015, which included provisions authorizing the park to be located at three sites, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Hanford, Washington, and Los Alamos, New Mexico. President Obama signed the National Defense Authorization Act into law on December 19th, 2014. And then on November 2015, Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell and Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz signed the memorandum of agreement between the two agencies defining the respective roles in creating and managing the park. The agreement included provisions for enhanced public access, management, interpretation, and historic preservation. With the signing, the Manhattan Project National Historic Park was officially established.
Look, yeah. I'm not opposed to visiting the park. Yeah, I'm interested.
I would 100%
interested.
Yeah.
But I swear to God, if there is like a long road that's lined with oak trees, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to be mad.
I know. Well, you know, maybe in Tennessee,
I want somber statues.
You might see some trees in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, considering
that's fair.
Oak Ridge. But, you know, Los Alamos, New Mexico, probably safe. You're not going to see a lot of trees. Just a lot of desert. A
lot of dirt.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, you know, it's just, it didn't sit well with me before getting into the notes, and in a crazy turn of events, it still doesn't sit well with me.
Yep.
And that's my hot take. I mean, obviously glad that we ended the war, but I feel like at that point, I think, and this is easy to say because I'm not sort of in the 1940s during World War II, but I think we could have won the war without doing this.
Yeah.
I think that's my problem.
I agree.
Is that I think by this point we had enough momentum and we were starting to close in that we didn't need to do this to get Japan's surrender. I mean, it's Japan.
Right.
You know, and yeah, because Germany surrendered before Japan. So Germany had already surrendered by this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, We've already taken out Germany. Like, yeah, I think. Sorry, Harry Truman. You don't have my support on this one, my dude.
Yeah, I agree.
And put that on my grave. Put that my grave.
I agree.
Friend, daughter, anti-atomic bomb. Supporter.
May she rest in peace.
May she rest in bliss.
Yeah.
But with that said, that is the end of our atomic bomb episode. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday, Lizzie.
Happy birthday, me.
Yay!
And thank you all. You are the greatest gift I could ever have. And as always, we love you so, so much. And if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. You can rate us, you can review us, you can subscribe to us. We love you so, so much, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.